how should we say hello? I think we'll just say hello. Hello, friends, lovers, countrymen of all heights, widths, and flavours. I am Ben Vanderveld, and welcome to this month's Third Foot, the extra trivial appendage to our normal two on Worst Foot Forward. And alongside me, bounding and leaping into this month's episode, is my co-host, Barry McStay. Hello, Barry.
Hello, happy nearly 29th of February. We get one this year.
We do get one this year, and you have got your finger on the calendrical pulse of this week's episode, because we're going to talk about leap years and odd calendars. As you'll probably know, listeners, certainly long-time listeners, my favourite fact of the entire podcast history, which Barry brought to the table, God, 4 or 5 years ago, was about Sweden in the early 18th century trying to come to terms with the whole Julian Gregorian calendar schism and not quite getting it right, and so having to put in not just a February the 29th, but also the only February the 30th in the history of the world.
It's like a country switching from driving on the right to driving on the left over a course of 18 months.
But we are going to talk about those calendrical crossovers, but I'm going to talk about a couple of big things that happened on the 29th of February, and then dig down into some legislation about the Julian Gregorian crossover. But first of all, we're going to talk about February the 29th, 1504. Can you tell me what relatively rare astronomical event happened on that day?
Did we have an eclipse?
Yes, we had a total lunar eclipse. And which historical rogue took advantage of that lunar eclipse?
Historical rogue. Rogue is such a loaded word in the 1500s.
Yes, it is.
We'll have had a Borgia around then. Was it a Borgia?
No, so I should... Maybe I've slightly led the witness on this one. Someone who... Well, I think at his time was considered a pioneering idiot, and then mainstream conventional wisdom has suggested is a bold, if wayward, explorer. But now revisionist history has gone, oh, he's quite the wrong'un.
Oh, fine, Columbus then.
There we are. There we are. So, on his final voyage to what I hope by then he'd realised was not the East Indies, he got stuck in Jamaica, and he got stuck there for about 6 months, and the kind inhabitants of Jamaica continued provisioning him for about 6 months. He'd actually got stuck there in 1503, and the local people looked after him, but basically after 6 months they stopped because they were disappointed with what the Spaniards could provide them in trade. I have not found any evidence that also the Spaniards, I don't know, did a bit of raping and pillaging, but that is what Columbus did in lots of other places. But basically, they stopped providing him with stuff. So Columbus, in what I have to say is a sort of impressively sneaky bit of negotiation, said, well, if you do that, you're going to make God angry. And God will show you a sign that he is
Columbus.
Angry. Oh, Columbus.
That's straight out of Tintin.
Well, this is where it comes from, mate.
Did Hergé borrow this plot point in the Temple of the Sun?
Absolutely, he did. So he used an almanac authored by Abraham Zacuto, more on him in a moment, which was full of astronomical tables covering the years 1475 to 1506. And he looked at it and was like, lads, there's a lunar eclipse on the way. We can use this to our advantage. And he went to his cabin to pray, timed the eclipse with his hourglass, and shortly before it ended, after 48 minutes, he came back and told them that they were to be forgiven. And when the moon started to appear from the shadow of the earth, he told them that God had pardoned them, and they started to provide food again. Which two other famous pieces of literature before Tintin was that trick repeated in?
The Count of Monte Cristo.
Nope.
And Lady Chatterley's Lover.
you have to bed yourself with a working class man, otherwise yes. the moon will turn blood red.
Mellors won't come until the eclipse is finished.
So King Solomon's Mines,
oh,
where
yes.
Alan
yes,
Quatermain uses a similar trick in a local tribe, and also the one that I quite like in Mark Twain's A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, where he escapes being burnt at the stake by predicting a solar eclipse. Like, I don't know about you. I think if I was about to be burnt at the stake in medieval times and then I predicted a solar eclipse, I think the medieval people would then definitely burn me at the stake for being
like
a witch.
Definite witch, yeah.
Definite witch. But more, a little bit more, on another unheralded hero, or certainly unheralded in the mainstream hero, and not just an unheralded hero, an unheralded Jewish hero. Abraham Zacuto, Abraham ben Shmuel Zacut, who was a Castilian astronomer, astrologer, mathematician, rabbi, and historian.
I like that he had astronomer and astrologer. I'd like to think, rather than him being both, he just wasn't sure which one was the right one. He described himself as astrologer, astronomer. Both, yeah. I cover all bases.
Yes, hello, I am archaeologist and paleontologist.
I like Darrow Breen's methods of remembering which is which.
Go on.
Astronomy, nom nom nom, delicious science. Astrology, that's a bit shit, like a log.
Great. Tremendous. So, Zacuto is a great example of why, perhaps, if it is your nation's policy to be horrible to Jewish people and boot them out, ultimately it'll end badly for you. See also Hitler and his inability to create a functioning nuke/V2 missile.
Oppenheimer is Judaism's diss track.
Well, Oppenheimer and Einstein and literally every half-decent physicist in the early 20th century.
Yeah.
But 1492, when Columbus sailed the ocean blue, is also when Ferdinand and Isabella went, let's throw out the Jews. Yes, the rhyme does work. And for reasons, I would say, more of pragmatism rather than a love of the old Semites, Manuel the First of Portugal went, all right, come into my kingdom and I'll look after you. Mm. And in response to what Ferdinand and Isabella said, King John the Second of Portugal went, all right, come on into my court. May have been for... probably more likely to be for pragmatic reasons of going, let's not have a brain drain, or let's take advantage of Spain's brain drain. And he was still there in the early reign of Manuel I as well.
I like, the idea that Portugal developed a nuke at this point.
Yeah, well, they pretty much developed an economic nuke, because this is the point in the world where Portugal was probably had the greatest navy on earth, certainly the most capable. And, you know, the main thing they were looking for was a sea route to India. And Zacuto was the man put on top of this, because Abraham Zacuto both developed a new type of astrolabe for determining latitude at sea, and created this almanac as well, which revolutionized ocean navigation. So he wrote in Salamanca, this was before he moved to Portugal, in the 1470s, the Hahiba Hagodal, the great book, and it's 65 detailed astronomical tables covering, you know, like I think 4 or 5 decades, talking about the position of the sun, the moon, the 5 planets. And this is the thing that Columbus consulted. Also, he developed this astrolabe, and the reason it was so important is before that, to determine the position on the high seas, navigators had to correct for compass error, basically the deviating magnetic north and true north. And instead, what Zacuto was able to provide with both the almanac and the astrolabe was a really accurate table of solar declination, which basically means they could use the sun instead. And never mind Columbus, without it, Vasco da Gama wouldn't have been able to do his heroic journey. So wow. Once again, if you want to do something well, employ Jews.
Yes.
I feel like I've gone perhaps like a little bit too partisan on this, but
yeah.
it goes back to like goodness gracious me of the wonderful sketch of claiming that everyone from Jesus and Shakespeare downwards was Indian. But
yeah. What you're saying here, Ben, is that we have this Jewish inventor to thank for all of colonialism.
No, I think you'll find what we have is that we have this Jewish invention to thank for all of global trade. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with the idea of putting Jews at the heart of starting global trade. Other events that happened on February the 29th. 1988, good year for civil rights. If you look in a microcosm, Sven Robinson became the first member of Canada's House of Commons to come out as gay. Sound?
Oh, great.
And also on the 29th of February 1988, Archbishop Desmond Tutu was arrested along with 100 other clergymen during a five-day anti-apartheid demonstration. And, you know, that's, wow, that's right at the tipping point of that.
Huge.
Couple of famous people to be born that's worth talking about. Joss Ackland, you know, as we all know and love for the great role of Denomalos in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, one of the greatest villains of the silver screen. And also Annie Blanche Banks, better known as Tempest Storm, who was dubbed the Queen of Exotic Dancers and is one of the greatest burlesque artists of the 20th and 21st century. And she worked for more than 60 years.
Cool.
So just, I say a hat tip, a feathered skull cap tip to her.
Yes. February 29th, the way I remember it is it's Olympic years. And then I remember it's an Olympic year because it's a February 29th. They inform each other for me.
Yes.
I had a quick look while you were chatting as well. Dinah Shore, the American actress, was also born on February 29th.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, she was Southern Belle type singing. She was very involved in the early development of the women's ladies professional golf tour as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
One of the first women's majors was named after her. And Tony Robbins, who you would have thought could have like willed himself to be born on a more... regular birthday.
I missed that. You mean weird cult leader and actually highly problematic weirdo Tony Robbins?
Yes.
Yes, does his best.
Think yourself powerful, Tony Robbins. Think yourself born on February 29th.
Yes, think yourself consensual, Tony Robbins, allegedly. One other thing. What, in the spirit of, you know, days being World Book Day or World Dog Day, what do you think February the 29th is?
Is that World Calendar Day?
No, it's Rare Disease Day.
Oh, okay.
Which is very pleasing, isn't it? That's a strong bit of branding.
Oh, but that feels cruel in a way. If you've got a really rare disease, you've got bad enough luck as it is without sticking your one day of awareness into a four... every 4 years as opposed to annual.
Yeah, it doesn't really help for the, for want of a better word, promotion of rare diseases.
How are we ever going to fundraise for this rare sickle cell microbial infection?
Don't worry.
We don't get to actually raise awareness on it more than... And it's an Olympic year. It'll get swallowed up in the news.
You're right. It's not been well thought out, has it?
No.
But I want to talk about the thing I alluded to earlier, the Julian-Gregorian crossover, which happened across the world at various times. I alluded it to earlier with Sweden's mess up, and it was basically adopting a different way of dividing up the year. I'm not going to get granular into what it was, but broadly speaking, there was about 11 or 12 days that difference between them, and different countries adopted it at different times. I've looked at the United Kingdom doing it, and we were really far behind. Most of Europe adopted the Gregorian calendar in 1582, but we didn't adopt it until September 1752.
Bloody Europe trying to impose its stupid days on us.
100% that! 100% that! And what's...
Bloody queer Italians with their new number ordering.
It's. I mean, it is that, like, there was a lot of opposition against it, because, like, we don't want to have this new popish calendar. It's bizarre.
Yeah, it is tied up a bit in the Reformation, to be fair.
Yeah, completely. But there's lots of other weird things. I mean, it felt like there was lots of calendars happening at the same time. Obviously, Jews and Muslims had the lunar calendar a lot more, and we still do. But you'd also have the idea of a financial year is very much there, and also the regnal year. So people would set their calendars by when the monarch was crowned and go by that. So rather than going, the year is 1752, they go, oh, this is the sixth year of the reign of Charles the First or whatever. That's obviously those dates don't sync up. Please don't take my history degree away from me. But what's odd is that, firstly, other countries like, I don't know, Scotland had already synced up by the year 1600. But England was like, no, we're sticking to our guns.
Despite the fact they then had the same ruler from a couple of years after that.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. You had the Venetian Republic was one of the first to adopt the Gregorian calendar in 1522, France 1564. But you would also have, particularly in England, there was this informal system of dual dating to attempt to reduce confusion. So a date would be written as, say, the 21st of January 1719/20. Or something that would almost look like a fraction of like 1719/20.
Yeah, but they did that in Russia as well, because Russia did it really late. Did it in 1918, yeah. I think, under Lenin, and they initially did. They were basically the country that was 13 days behind the rest of Europe or whatever it was. But then when they did the changeover, I think Lenin insisted they write the Julian date in brackets for a few months. Sort of that. Again, transitioning from the left side of the road to the right side of the road gradually rather than all in one go.
Surely in Russia they transferred from the left side of the road to the far left side of the road. We said before, like, Elizabeth I did try to reform the calendar in the mid-1580s, but it was like, no, we'll have none of that Catholic nonsense. Even Sir Isaac Newton couldn't get it over the line. And basically, it all comes down to Easter, because Easter was a movable feast. This nonsense that, you know, the Council of Nicaea had failed to truly sort out over a millennia ago was still getting in the way. And yeah. So
Isaac Newton, good with apples, not good with eggs. Easter was a complete mystery to him.
The idea of how gravity works had been very different if an egg had fallen out of a tree. but Salvador Dali would have been invented a lot earlier if that had happened.
Yes.
So when it actually happened, it happened in 1751, and Britain instead had a 282-day year. What happened was the year started on March the 25th, and that was an attempt because we were so out of sync. And so the famous one that we talked about in the podcast before, where there was also a leap of 11 days jumping from September the 2nd to September the 14th, that was in 1752. So we made this huge leap of, like, we, you know, making up, missing out almost 80 days. And then the next year we went, hang on, we've still missed a bit out. There is obviously the very famous idea of there being riots in the street and people complaining and saying, we want our 11 days back. That is probably apocryphal.
Yes.
And it's probably based on...
What people don't realise is that there were actually riots scheduled for 11 days' time, and then they just had to bring them forward.
Superb. It's probably based on a painting by William Hogarth at the time, who sort of made a satirical painting called An Election Entertainment, which shows a placard carrying the slogan, "Give us our 11 days."
Yes. Yeah.
And there's another story I found that, by God, I hope it's true, which is a man called William Willett, who bet someone that he could dance for 12 days and 12 nights. He started dancing on the night of September the 12th and stopped the next morning, which was September the 14th. Which is just absolutely superb.
Very good.
And then, last of all, on this, there were some people who got sort of didn't believe that this would work. And so on 1753...
It'll still be Monday tomorrow.
Yeah, pretty much. So... The Gentleman's Magazine and Historical Chronicle reported that on the 24th of December 1752, a vast number of people gathered around the Glastonbury Thorn, which was a flower that allegedly flowered on Christmas Day. Huh. And they were very, very disappointed, and so they came back to watch it on the 5th of January, the second last day of Christmas, when it did flower.
Right.
and basically the Vicar of Glastonbury was like, "See, lads, it's flowered on New Christmas Day. That'll do." And they were hoping that the vicar would sort of like be on their side, but instead he preached a sermon of the virtue of obeying the New Calendar Act. So clearly he'd been bought off by the establishment. And the very last thing I want to speak about, I think quite a lot of listeners might know about. After the French Revolution, where the revolutionaries tried to put in a new revolutionary calendar. We've spoken about that before, so I don't want to talk about that. Instead, I want to tell you about...
That's the most important thing when you're dethroning a monarchy.
Yes,
forget
absolutely.
About, like, organising a sensible system of government and enacting social welfare, making sure everybody feels equitable. We need to have a new calendar based on the metric system.
Yeah, well, it was all, you know, get rid of all of the old fashioned notions that have been hung over for 1500 years and just make it a new, rational, straightforward metric calendar with a month named after a lobster. It's all absolutely mad. But instead, I want to talk about a guy called Isidore Auguste Marie François Xavier Comte, who invented delicious cheese. And he was a philosopher, mathematician, and he was a positivist, and he was trying to sort of remedy the social disorder caused by the French Revolution in various different areas. And he came up with a positivist calendar. And...
it had no Mondays in it, no Friday the 13th.
It was Garfield's favourite calendar.
Yeah, every day of the week was actually also the weekend.
Oh, imagine, what a dream. The months were exactly 28 days long, divided into 4 7-day weeks, and then it had a standalone monthless day dedicated to all dead people at the end of every year, which... weird. And then every leap year would have an extra monthless day dedicated to women. My favourite thing about it is that each day was named after a historic person or organisation, and all months and years began on Mondays. So I'm afraid that that's your idea has not survived. But I must tell you the months, because they are terrific fun. So the months in order, you have the month of Moses, Homer, Aristotle, Archimedes, Caesar, St. Paul, Charlemagne, Dante, Gutenberg, Shakespeare, Descartes, Frederick, and Bichat. I don't know who Bichat was. Oh, he's a French anatomist and pathologist. But because the days could also be named after famous people, you could go, what day is it today? Why? It is the Buddha of Moses. Or it is the... It's the... What day is it today? Oh, it's the Wayne Rooney of Archimedes today.
It's Rebecca Vardy Day.
It's, I mean, absolute chaos, isn't it? It's the Groucho Marx of Gutenberg.
A lot of men on that list.
A lot of men.
Also, a surprising amount of rulers and monarchs on that list for what is essentially a revolutionary idea.
Mm-hmm.
With Charlemagne and Caesar in there. But yeah, nice. I literally every day of the year, all 365 or whatever it was, had a name.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was an attempt to replace Catholic saint days.
Oh, God, imagine the poor rare disease people. 29th of February also happens to be Einstein Day. They're like, oh, we're never going to get a look in.
Oh, God, yeah, that'd be absolutely awful, wouldn't it be? I mean, like, surely you'd want the 29th to be the, I don't know, the Hippocrates of Galen Day.
Yes.
But you wouldn't stand a chance.
Taylor Swift Day.
Oh, God, yeah, you'd have to update it. That'd be great. Yeah, I love it. The Swiftie of Billie Eilish. This is a joke that we can literally keep doing for all of time. But
that day's been cancelled because that person's been cancelled.
Oh, good point. Yeah. There we are. That is my brief history of time.
Yes, very brief.
Very brief indeed. So do get in touch, listeners. If any of you have a birthday on February the 29th, get in touch with us either on Twitter, not X, or Instagram, where we're on @WorstFoot on both of those, or at WorstFootForwardPodcast@gmail.com. If any of you celebrate the February the 30th, I know we have a few Scandi listeners, that'll be great. But yeah, any leaplings, as you are known, get in touch, give us a shout, and we will toast our Worst Foot Forward tankards to you this year. Otherwise, thank you as ever for supporting the show, for supporting the podcast. This is an episode that we are only able to do because of the free time that we are given via Patreon. So if you're in the mood to sling us a couple of quid or more and keep the lights on here at Worst Foot Forward Towers, head to patreon.com/worstfootforward and give us your children's college fund. Until next time, we hope that you have a fine time and a lovely leap day. Ta-ta.
Remember to look before you do.